You're listening to Freed on Business. To talk to Jim and his guests, call 305-541-2350. That's 305-541-2350. Now, back to your host, Jim Freed.
Well, my favorite is the guy that goes on the property inspection with Google Earth. They're looking from the eye in the sky, and they say, well, between the offering memorandum that the broker sent me and the Google Maps picture taken a few months ago, I have all the information I need. I don't need to go there and walk on the property and touch it and talk to people that live there or work there. Wow, Jerry, seems like that's a little bit off. What's your take on that?
Jim, the key is to look with your eyes and look with your mind. Look at the property and its physical condition, the location and the neighborhood, the history of comparable rents and comparable sales, the current and historical revenue and expenses of the property. Look for patterns. Look for needed replacements. Look for upgrade requirements. Confirm the adequacy of the replacement reserves that the broker gave to you. Be sure that the reserves are sufficient to ensure that the funds are available. And of course, confirm current cash flow. Confirm cash flow history. And lastly, but most important, the probability of short and intermediate term cash flow. This information is without question available from the seller, the broker, or the investment banker. Talk to the seller, broker, or investment banker and insist on the information, Jim. But remember that their primary job, both the broker's and the investment banker's primary job, is to sell the seller low and to sell you as the buyer high.
So, Jerry, it seems to me then that, we've gone, we've looked at the property, we've gone through the books and records, we've thought things through. That's some properties, but in the past, for instance, when you bought from the federal government, you didn't have any financial history, you didn't have any physical reports. You closed the deal there, but the price was so low, you probably couldn't make a mistake. You were buying by the pound. Does that work today?
It didn't work then. The answer is that because we couldn't get all of the information when we dealt with the RTC, we actually had a 7-year no debt service transaction. And then from the 8th to the 12th year, it was only if, as, and when the revenue was received. So yes, we bought it cheaply. Yes, we didn't have all of the information, but we didn't really have any of the risks that would be normally associated because we had no debt service, which took up the 35% of our revenue.
But that's an unusual case, Jerry. Today, would you buy without physical or financial history?
I wouldn't buy from anyone without physical or financial history unless they were the RTC again and I got a special gift from God. If it wasn't for that, I will tell you right now that there are rules and minimum standards to live by when you're investing in real estate. You may bend the rules for other things, like a larger portion of ice cream, but you never, ever bend the rules for real estate. I want you to remember that I don't want you to be a clown when you are checking for physical and financial history. Don't be a clown when you buy. Don't do partial jobs. Know exactly the information you're getting. Be sure you're getting the truth. You don't be a clown because it's so difficult to take off that makeup. And you don't want to have to start to try to cure the mistakes you made because you were lazy when you were doing this work to begin with.
Now, Jerry, a lot of times people buy portfolios. They go, well, buy these 6 properties. These 2 are great. These 4 are dogs, or these 4 are great and these 2 are dogs. But put them all together, wrap them up, and make sure they cross-collateralize them. And so one is tied to the other. Seems kind of smart when they serve it up to you that way, but what have you found in practice?
In practice, I found that unless you want to be committed, you never, ever, ever buy property in anything other than a single asset entity, committed because you were stupid. And at some level of stupid, I guess, you deserve to be committed. Every property you purchase has to be in a separate legal single asset entity, so that if there's a problem in a property, that problem doesn't drag down any other property. It stands on its own. It has to be financed on its own. It has to stand on its own. because you can be hurt by something that you don't even know about. For instance, someone could slip on your property. Someone could fall out of a window on your property. I'm laughing, I apologize. But it would cost you significantly in lawsuits. And the only way to protect your assets is to hold each asset in a separate legal identity.
Now, Jerry, I've always found that stability is the best predictor of overall value. A number of properties have people that come and go. It seems to me that that's not really the best approach, that the best approach is rent roll stability. The turnover has incredible costs. What are your thoughts on this?
Turnover is operations' worst enemy. Turnover is absolute poison. I'm talking about turnover, which means people moving in and moving out, usually in 1 year, sometimes in 18 months, where you have to replace the tenant. And if you're doing it every single year, nobody is going to be able to tell you that it's not going to cost you a lot of money simply because people move out on the last day of a month. They generally move in on the first day of 1 month later, not the next day of the first month. But there's a 30-day gap between move out and move in. That is 30 days of 12 months, or 8% of your total rent roll for that 12-month period. In addition, you have to pay fix-up costs, advertising, and broker's commissions. And those costs bring you up to about 11%. So when someone tells you that they're turning over the property every year and they're raising the rent by 6 or 7%, the truth is, you are losing 11%, you are gaining 6%, you're still a negative loser by 4 or 5%. There's no way around it. Turnover is the worst thing you can have. The more you are able to manage it, the more you can reduce the turnover, the better it is for you. There are actual states in the United States like Oklahoma, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Georgia, Florida, that can turn over 50 or 60 or even 70% of their leases every single year. Imagine trying to make up for that on a yearly basis. How can you possibly lose 8% and raise the rent 5% and think you have a profit?
You know, it's absolutely unbelievable. And I want to kind of jump ahead in our discussion, Jerry. I want to talk about, you've been talking about people that pitch you on the deal, the owners, the sellers, the realtors, the investment bankers. Let's talk about the people that pitch you on the financing of the property. They'll come up to you, they'll say, sign on this personally, I'll make sure I get you a better loan. What would you tell somebody that's going to come up to you and say, hey, this is a great stabilized property, sign on the dotted line, give me your guaranteed, I'll get you a better rate?
My statement would say that if you are being asked to put more than one property into a legal entity, or if you are being asked to collateralize the loan with anything else, or if you are signing personally for a commercial real estate loan, you have to be insane to do that. It's not necessary. There are no requirements to do it. If the banker is telling you do it, but you know we'll get you a better rate, and we would never enforce that, he's lying to you. He will sell you, your wife, and your children to get his money. There is no limit that a banker won't go to collect his money. So never do that.
Now, let's say that somebody tells you, I'm really under the gun. I got to get this done. I need you to work with me on timing. Let's just make time of the essence. Jerry, what do you think when somebody says to you, well, let's do this deal, but we're going to say time is of the essence?
Once again, this is something that you never, never, never do. Time is of the essence are words of art that actually restrict you from taking any additional time from the date that the time is of the essence dictates. In other words, if you don't have time is of the essence, and you're not able to close on a certain date because perhaps your lender is not ready and he needs another week, you can get that. If the seller doesn't want to sell it to you, you can go into court and the judge will give you that time, generally up to 30 days. When your agreement has time is of the essence, that's it. You might as well put a gun to your head and play Russian roulette. You will not get 1 hour or 1 minute of extra time, nor will any judge give you that time. So never, under any circumstances, sign anything that has time is of the essence.
Oh, I got another one to set you off on, Jerry. Another one of your favorites is specific performance. I'm not even going to tee you up on this. I'm just going to say the words specific performance and ask you to speak to our friends.
Specific performance means that if you're not closing a deal, they can go after everything you own and everything you have and actually collect it from you. It means that you will specifically perform. You will finish that transaction, whether you like it or not, whether you think you're overpaying by 100% or not. There is no out from specific performance in the courts and no out from specific performance from the seller who's going to go after you and take the close right off your back. No specific performance. No time is of the essence.
Now, Jerry, I'm going to ask the real estate brokers to step out of the room right now. Okay, we've given them enough time to step out of the room. Thank you. Now, what's usually the difference after everybody's done their brinksmanship, they pushed away from the table, said, I'm not closing this freaking deal no matter what. They've gone out, they've had dinner, it's 11 o'clock at night, it's the day before New Year's, and they got to close the deal. What's standing between the two sides?
What they have is the proverbial never-ending bank account called the broker's commission. A buyer and seller are only a broker's commission apart, and in every case, listen to what I'm telling you now, in every single case, the broker will contribute to closing the deal. There is no such thing as a broker who stands on principle, because first you have to find a broker who has that principle, and second, to believe that he would not close the deal and give up half of his commission is ridiculous. Every broker, every deal, the broker will kick in a percentage of that cost.
Now, Jerry, that's kind of the run through all of your ideas and premises, but I do know that you want to say one last thing to the folks that have been joining us today. Why don't you go ahead and do that now?
I hope you've enjoyed these sessions. And I hope that you've learned something from it. I invite you to feel comfortable enough to send me a note if you have any questions. I promise you that if you send me an email note, I will answer those questions. It may take a day or two, but I answer every question that comes to me. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, Jerry, I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing all of your thoughts and your views and your experiences and your stories from the trenches with us and our audience. This has been a great special edition of Freedom Business here on 880 AM here in Miami on the Salem Media Network. I want to thank you so much, Jerry, and I'm looking forward to having you come back and tell us exactly how it all turned out in just a few months.
I look forward to it, and thank you again, Jim.
It's my absolute pleasure.